Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Network on Saturday, September 22nd, 2018. This is episode 1525. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by JW Player, the most powerful and flexible video platform, letting businesses, including us, customize the video experience on their website. To learn more and get 50% off your business subscription, visit jwplayer.com/twit. And use the code TWIT at checkout.
Hello there, and welcome to The Tech Guy. This is the show where we talk about technology and answer your calls live. My name is Rich DeMuro. I'm filling in for Leo Laporte today. Thanks, Leo, for letting me do this. And I'm happy to be with you on the show to talk about one of my favorite topics. It's been one of my favorite topics for a very long time in my life. Technology, of course. Thanks to you for joining me today. And just so you know who I am, I'm the tech reporter for KTLA News Channel 5 in Los Angeles. I do a tech segment for KTLA and various other TV stations around the nation. So sometimes I pop up in other places like Cleveland, New Orleans, Indianapolis, and a whole bunch of others. So hi to you guys if you're listening out there. I also have a blog at richontech.tv. So if you want to learn more about me, you can go there. And I've got a podcast of my own called Rich on Tech. And of course, all the social media places that, man, I struggle to keep up with. I mean, it used to be I just did my job as a reporter reporting stories. Now I got to remember to post my story to Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, where else these days? And it can't be the same. I don't just cross post. You know, you got to show behind the scenes pictures on Instagram stories and then show a pretty picture on Instagram and then show what's happening at that moment on Twitter and then kind of the big stuff on Facebook and go live. So it's become very complicated for a reporter these days, but I'm not complaining. Believe me, it's a nice problem to have. And it is a lot of fun to bring you guys all the latest technology that's happening all over the place. And this week, again, was a big week for tech, and we had two major things. Obviously, we had the launch of the iPhone. They were in stores on Friday. But Amazon, man, Amazon really threw everyone for a loop. So there was rumblings of some new Amazon products, and then all of a sudden, surprise, a bunch of journalists had flown up to Seattle for an event on Thursday, and Amazon just, man, they really launched a whole bunch of new products, 14 new enabled products, and over 70 new features. So when you talk about things that developers can do with Alexa, talk about the products, when you talk about all the different things, there were 70 total announcements. Now, I thought this was kind of interesting because it was a surprise, but what happened Friday? Right, the iPhone. So Thursday was Amazon, Friday was iPhone. So did Amazon schedule their event to sort of one-up Apple? These companies are frenemies. You know, Apple, Google, Amazon, they're all frenemies, right? They need each other, but they don't. In the case of Apple and Amazon, they're actually probably the most distant when you think about what they do, because if you look at what Amazon's doing with and sort of their Fire TV lineup, they don't really, I mean, really the only thing you need from Apple with them is a phone to shop on, right? Or a laptop. But otherwise, I mean, they don't really need Apple. Now, Apple needs Google in a certain way, you know, because search is big and all the Google products work nicely on the iPhone. And Google needs Apple because, you know, they want people to run the Google apps on their iPhones. Ideally, I guess they would have everyone with an Android phone, but that's not happening in the US. But anyway, let's talk about some of these products because there are a lot of them. So this is the other thing. It's like when you look at what Amazon's doing, we are going further and further down the rabbit hole of when you pick one of these companies that you're aligned with, you're sort of in it and that's it. You can't really get out very easily because the more products you buy that work with their platform and their ecosystem, the tougher it is to get out. And you find that in sort of a simple way with the iPhone when you start uploading your pictures to Photos. Used to be iPhoto, I think, but now it's just Photos. You start using iMessage, you start using FaceTime. It's tough for people to get out of these little places that they build for themselves with all these different products. In the case of Amazon, if you start adding all these smart home products that work with and then all of a sudden you want to switch allegiances to something else like Siri or maybe Google Assistant, it's tough. Not everything works with each other. I think in the terms of Google Assistant and there's a lot more crossover than when you look at what Apple's doing with HomeKit. Some of those things work with the other two, but not always. And of course, if you're the company making these things like a Philips Hue or a Lifix or any other number of products, you kind of want to work with as many as possible. But on the flip side, these companies want you to be a little bit more exclusive because for various reasons, obviously money being one of them, but also things work a little bit better when you sort of work closely with that company to make them work better. So what did we get new from Amazon? I'm not going to go over all 14 new products, but I'll go over the highlights here. So new Echoes. So the new Echo Dot is, it just has a better speaker and it's got new fabric kind of around it, just the way the Echo looks. Echo Plus is their top of the line speaker that has a built-in hub so you can control your smart home stuff, has a better speaker as well. Then you've got the new Echo Show. So Echo Show is one of those interesting products that I don't think you see the need for it immediately, but once you have one, you kind of like, okay, this is cool for various reasons. For me personally, I have an iPad on my counter that serves as sort of like a place to, watch recipes when I'm cooking or view my cameras that I have around the house and also control Sonos. So this is sort of in that position. So it's got a nice new 10-inch HD display. And that also functions as a hub. And the cool thing they did with the Echo Show is not just upgrading the screen to be bigger and now HD, but they kept the price the same at $230, which I think is expensive for something that you don't necessarily need. But they also added Skype support. So now you'll be able to Skype with friends over that. And I get it. I mean, FaceTime is how a lot of people in the US video chat. But Skype is huge worldwide, and I love the fact that Amazon kind of branched out and actually put in something that's not their own. Other devices, an Echo wall clock. So this is an Echo wall clock that looks like an analog clock. You can put it on your wall. This is $30, but what's cool about this is that it gives you a visual representation of not only the time throughout the day, but let's say you set a timer on your Echo. Now you can see a visual representation of how much time you have left. And real world example of that is for me with my kids, I usually, my kid reads for 15 minutes each night, or I say how long you can watch TV. And it was really interesting. My kid is, one of them is 7, the other one is turning 4. And to watch my 7-year-old kind of grasp that concept of time, especially with a clock, we have a big analog clock in our living room, was really cool. And so I like the idea of this, is that you see how long you have left to do certain things. They also added a bunch of stuff for your home theater, like a sub, a link where you can connect regular speakers to. But one of the more interesting things is this Amazon Basics microwave. So this is a $60 microwave that takes commands, which I think is pretty smart because you can say things like reheat my coffee or defrost these vegetables, which is smart because I don't know about you, but I've never figured out the defrost button on my microwave. So if I can just speak those commands, that's really cool. And we all know that every microwave popcorn bag says, number one rule, do not use the popcorn button on your microwave, right? Why do they put the button on there if you can't use it? Well, you can't because it'll burn your popcorn every single time. Well, the Amazon Basics microwave is smart enough to ask you the brand of the popcorn and it will actually perfectly pop that popcorn. And there's even a little button on there that lets you reorder popcorn. And finally, the Amazon Smart Plug. This is a smart plug that's $25, and that's nothing new. There's a million smart plugs on Amazon. I think what's cool about this is that it comes with that Amazon warranty, it comes with that Amazon guarantee, and you know that it's going to work really well with I would have liked them to put that price at maybe $10 or $15, but I love these things, especially during the holidays, to turn on and off your holiday lights and lamps around the house with sunrise and sunset. So if you don't have a smart plug, go research them or pre-order the Amazon one, because I love the fact they're going to make that big time. You're listening to The Tech Guy. Rich DeMuro in today for Leo Laporte. We're going to take your calls coming up next at 1-888-ASK-LEO or 1-888-827-5536. I'm Rich DeMuro in for Leo Laporte. I know some of you have those new iPhones in your hands. We can talk about that or anything else when it comes to tech at 8888-ASK-LEO after this. Welcome back to The Tech Guy. This is the show where we talk about technology and answer your pressing questions about the tech world, whether it's a new phone, whether it's something that's bugging you about your device, if you need help with something, maybe help deciding something. You're thinking about two different products and maybe you want a little guidance on which one you should get. I will help. My name is Rich DeMuro. I'm in for Leo Laporte today, and we're taking your calls at 8888-ASK-LEO, 8888-ASK-LEO. This is the time of the show when I bring on Kim Schaffer. She is the person that you will talk to if you decide to call in. Kim, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
How are you doing today?
I'm great. Did you get your new iPhone?
I did. I have the iPhone XS Max, which I think personally, they should have just called the XS Plus. Mm-hmm. Why does it have to be the Max? Like, why does it have to be so confusing?
Yeah, I don't know.
Did you get yours?
No, I'm still on the 6S Plus.
I love how we say this in America today. It's just like, did you get the new iPhone? Like, it just came out days ago.
I knew you'd get it, but I, like I said, I'm still here on my handy 6S Plus that's going to last me until it doesn't.
See, and I think you bring up a good point, because a lot of people are at that place in their lives where these devices are lasting long enough mm-hmm. where they don't just have to run out and upgrade them. But I will tell you, Kim, even before I was on TV and all this stuff and the radio doing tech, I was one of those, I call them nerds, mm-hmm. enthusiasts, let's put it that way, that used to wait outside in line to get phones. And my wife used to think I was crazy. I used to do that for Black Friday, for various cell phones that launched. And my wife, like, it's just fun to be out in those lines, you know?
Yeah, no. Not my thing.
Not your thing.
Not
okay.
My thing.
So we've got the phone lines open at 8888-ASK-LEO. Folks are calling in.
We've got Elise in Los Ojos, who I think she's frustrated with her device. She would like an alternative to the standard Apple Mail program on her phone.
Okay,
you might be able to help her with that.
Let's go to Elise in Los Ojos. Elise, you are on with
Hi.
Rich. How are you?
Good. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you. What did I say? Okay, Los. How do you say it?
Well, it's Los Ojos. It means the bears. And it's in San Luis Obispo County.
Okay, awesome. And it means the bears?
It means, yeah, the bears. There used to be grizzly bears roaming here in the day a long time ago.
Oh.
They're all gone.
Okay, be careful.
Yeah,
it's funny because
you don't have to be careful now.
Okay, you don't have to be careful anymore? Okay.
No, not for bears. Nope.
So what's going on?
Well, I have kind of a two-part question, but I have been very frustrated with my MacBook Air for quite some time with the resident Apple Mail app or program. It seems like it's become less intuitive. I'm not a computer geek by any means, but it doesn't seem to be a real intuitive program, but the most frustrating thing to me is, and I've spent countless hours on the phone with Apple Tech and gotten nowhere. And they've apparently referred it to their engineering team, but they don't get back to me. And this is, we all begin composing an email that we can't finish at the same time we started. So you just click the red button. And you want to save it? Yes, it goes into draft folder.
Correct.
Well,
that's
mine go
pretty standard.
Into the draft folder, and they stay there for about 5 minutes, and then they're gone forever.
Hmm. Where are they going?
And they No, who knows? They haven't been able to find them. They're not in my trash, and they're just gone.
What?
And I first noticed it maybe 7 or 8 months ago. I was composing a very important email with information on it that wasn't anyplace else on my computer. So, of course, when it went away, that was very distressing. And
so what email program are you using? I mean, like, who's your provider?
Gmail.
Okay. And you don't like using the web interface on Gmail?
Well, the reason, I haven't gone that route. I have 3 different Gmail accounts, and I use them all pretty much equally. One is more of the basic, general, default, I guess you would say, email account. But I have emails, and I'm not a social media person, so I do a lot of email. So okay. I don't want to have to. The nice part about the Apple Mail program is that it receives email simultaneously on all 3 of those
accounts.
Right, so
you like having all 3. Well, a couple things. Exactly. I mean, I think the problem is mainly something is corrupt on your email program. I don't think that everyone that's using Apple Mail is having a problem with drafts disappearing after 5 minutes. So I think that that's the main thing, is there is some sort of corruption somewhere. So my recommendation would be to basically start over. So all your email is not actually being saved in the program. Usually it's saved on the Gmail servers, and the program is just reading those mails. So back in the day, we used to actually download email. It was called POP3. Your computer used to call the server up, fetch that mail, bring it onto your local device, and delete it off the server all at the same time. And that wasn't a very pretty solution. It worked for a while, and still may work for certain people. But most of the world and most of the providers have gone to this method where it actually just looks at what the mail on the server says, and then it just mirrors that on your device. So I think what you need to do is kind of reset the mail app, which may be a database thing on the mail program. So if you look at Apple Mail and database, maybe just look for a way to kind of rebuild that entire thing. So maybe delete out your current accounts and re-add them, and just make sure that you are accessing things through IMAP, which you should be, which is the protocol that doesn't download things. It just mirrors the server. I think that's the way your email accounts are there. So I would kind of start fresh. If you don't like that, I mean, there's a million other email programs. I know AirMail 3 is a popular one. Personally, I just use Gmail, the web interface. I really like that. I know you have different email accounts. You can set those up to all go through Gmail. I know I do that with my work mail and my other email accounts to make life a little bit easier, so I have everything in one place. But AirMail, I think they're on their 3rd version now. I'm looking at their website. AirMail 3, I know that one gets a lot of attention. People seem to like that one. So if you want to try an alternative first, maybe do that, or maybe restart the program, then try an alternative like AirMail. Good question, and glad you don't have to watch out for bears anymore. Rich DeMuro in for Leo Laporte today. We'll take more of your calls at 888-ASK-LEO, 888-ASK-LEO. We're talking tech next. Welcome back to The Tech Guy. Rich DeMuro here, sitting in for Leo Laporte, who's on vacation. He will be back soon. Thanks for joining me today, talking about technology, taking your phone calls at 888-ASK-LEO. And right now, I want to bring on a friend of the show, Scott Wilkinson. He is our resident home theater geek. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Hey, how you doing, Rich?
I'm doing great. And you recently went to Cedia, which
yep.
I've been to once. When I was in Indianapolis,
uh-huh.
And this is a big home theater show, and more
than that, it's everything in the custom home business.
So there's
a lot of IoT, Internet of Things, smart alarms and doorbells, and central heating and air, and central vacuuming and stuff, and a lot of home theater stuff as well.
It's interesting because as all trade shows go through their ups and downs, there was probably a point where the custom business was down, but now with Internet of Things and all these smart devices we're adding to our homes, I bet this is hotter than ever now.
Hotter than ever. Madam A was everywhere.
Madam A. Yeah, we can't say 3 words on this show, as I found out in my first segment. So there's Madam A. Hey, yes. Shlomo. And OKG.
Oh, yeah, right.
So
you don't want to activate all those devices out there for people who are listening.
It's really interesting because these devices, you know, I've got so many in my home and they do activate all the time. And it's interesting that we've seen some of the commercials on TV sort of play with them, you know, and activate them. I feel like there's going to be a point when we actually embrace this and, you know, you say it'll be like, unmute your TV now and order the latest book from, you know, whatever, you know, and it'll just interface directly with your Google Home and order whatever you need. So anyway,
right.
Let's talk about Cydia. You want to talk about LED walls?
Oh, yeah, man. This is super cool. This is the first really new, well, it's not even new, but it's the first new video display technology, certainly for the home and for commercial cinemas that we've had in many, many, many years. Now, LED video walls, we've seen for a long time in Vegas. When you go to CES, you see them all over the strip, all over, you know, the Fremont Street experience is a bunch of LEDs in an array forming an image. Now, outdoors, from very far away, those LEDs can be fairly large and they can be fairly far apart, relatively. But when you bring that technology into the home or even into a commercial cinema, those LEDs have to be really, really tiny and really close together, or you're going to see, you know, the pixel array. You're going to see individual pixels, and you don't want to see that when you're looking at a high-quality video image. So a number of companies have been working on making those LEDs smaller. And by LEDs, we're talking about red, green, and blue LEDs in a tight little triangle surrounded by a black substrate. And then there's the next one and the next one. And how far apart they are is called the pixel pitch. And so we need to get the pixel pitch down to below a certain value in order to be able to see, appear to see a continuous image, not individual pixels. And this is often called micro LED these days because they're tiny little LEDs. But in fact, there are several distinctions, all based on pixel pitch. So there's micro LED, there's what's called fine pitch, which is still a little bit larger, a little bit more distance, and mini LED, which is more distance still. Typically, the definitions vary. You ask one person, they'll say, oh, micro LED has to be below this amount of pixel pitch. Somebody else will say something different. Generally speaking, I think micro LED is under 1 millimeter pixel pitch. So the distance between the center of one LED cluster and the next one is 1 millimeter or less. The other really cool thing about LED walls is that they can be much brighter than any current display technology. I'm talking about, a wall-sized LED screen, a wall-sized screen that's putting out 500 nits or 1,000 nits.
What's a typical TV?
TV is like 100, these days up to 1,000.
So what does this mean?
But that's in a much smaller space. And that's only for a tiny little part of the screen. So you take a normal TV, like an LCD TV or an OLED TV, and you put up a tiny little white window, you might be able to get 500 or 1,000 nits. But if you fill the whole screen with white, it goes way down because it requires so much more power.
Right.
The same thing is true with LED screens, but they're built to do that. And so you can get 500 or 1,000 nits with the whole screen being full white. Now, that's actually dangerous to the human eyes.
I was going to say, you know, my mom used to say, don't sit so close to the TV.
Exactly.
I feel like with 500 nits, I'm just going to be like burning my retinas out.
Exactly. And you are. So, in fact, there's one commercially installed LED cinema screen down here in LA in Northridge that can, I think they've limited it to 300 nits.
Okay, good. Don't bring the kids if it's 500.
Yeah, really, or 1,000. Anyway, so there were a number of these screens at Cydia that I thought were very interesting. Samsung brought what they call the wall.
The wall.
The wall.
I saw that at CES.
Exactly. That was the one we saw at CES. Exactly. It's got a pixel pitch we think about 1.2 millimeters. So it's not quite micro, but it's close. I said, that's the one that's a larger version of it installed at in Northridge.
And what's really interesting about these theoretically is that the wall that I saw from Samsung, it's made up of these little almost like tiles. It almost like think Correct. About like a tablet, right? But yeah. a tablet yeah. has a bezel around it. These have, you know, you almost like
no bezel.
Yeah, like imagine you're like putting like tiles in your bathroom with the grout between them, right? But imagine there's no grout. You put right. these little tiles next to each other that are all like, let's say a tablet that's like 12 by 12, right?
Same, and roughly, yeah.
Theoretically, you could build these things as big as you want, right? I mean, the wall was 146 inches.
Correct. Exactly right. However, one thing to keep in mind is that the pixel pitch, the distance between the pixels, is absolutely fixed. So the size of the screen you build will determine the resolution it has.
Oh, interesting.
So the 146-incher you saw was 4K. That is 4,096 pixels across by 2160 up and down. If you built a larger one, you could get to 8K. If you built a smaller one, you'd get down to 1080p.
So do you think in the future this is how we're going to have TVs in our homes? We're going to yes. build these on our walls?
Yep. Yep, I do. Now, it's going to take a while. Right now, it's very expensive, particularly to precisely place these almost microscopic LEDs in the right place and have zero defects. You can have zero defects because you can easily see if there's a dead pixel. So it's and that's a very, very big engineering challenge to build, to put these LCDs or these LEDs exactly where they need to be and have them work perfectly.
But I love this idea. I love the idea of just going to a store, picking up a whole bunch of like a stack of these tiles, putting them on my wall. And don't forget, you don't have to light them all at once. Like, let's say you wanted like five TVs on your living room wall. You know
Absolutely.
What I mean? You just virtually build that into the thing.
Yep.
That is such a cool thought. But how much are we talking? $100,000 for a wall?
Many hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Okay.
At this time. We're at the very beginning.
Yeah.
But whereas at CES we saw one, here at Cedia we saw four.
Okay.
We saw Samsung, we saw Layard, we saw digital projection, in fact, five, Sony Crystal LED, which we saw at CES a couple of years ago as well, and the ViewTech Opus Cube. So that was five of them at Cedia. And they're only going to get more prolific and less expensive, as all technology does.
Yeah, I remember when the first plasma TVs were tens of thousands of dollars.
All right,
Scott, how can folks get in touch with you?
Well, at the moment, I am kind of free-ranging. If people want to email me, they can certainly at scott@twit.tv.
All right, Scott Wilkinson, our home theater geek, thanks so much for joining us. I'm Rich DeMuro. We're going to take more of your calls at 8888-ASK-LEO coming up next. Yeah, that stuff is seriously cool.
Seriously cool. Absolutely.
I love that idea, but it sounds like it's a ways off. You know, I've actually gotten picky in Vegas. I'm actually partial to the big LCD or LED screens, whatever you call LED screens, that are like the new ones with the ads versus the old, because I can tell the resolution difference. Like,
right.
I'm like, that one's new.
Yeah. I can't see the pixels.
It's like
in the old ones, you can say, "Oh yeah, I see the pixels. There they are." It's so easy.
Like in Times Square, the same thing. I'm like, I'm such a brat. I'm like, that I could tell was an old ad. I want if I was an ad buyer, I'd only want my ads shown on like the nice new screens.
Right, because they're so nice. Beatmaster asks, replacing a projector is easier than an entire LED wall when some pixels fail. Actually, Rich, you made the point. These LED walls consist of tiles, and if a pixel fails, all you have to do is replace that one tile. You don't have to replace the entire wall. And that's one of the advantages of it.
And it will get easier, like, if you think about
Absolutely.
It. You know,
Absolutely. At the moment, when you said, I like the idea of being able to buy a bunch of tiles.
I know, that's
home.
What I was going to ask. I know John came running in here, and I kind of thinking the same thing I was thinking is, you know, the tiles have to butt up again.
Like, to be perfectly aligned. It's
but there'll
a very,
be a special tool that you...
Replace what, make sure it's the corner.
Yeah. There'll be a special tool that you use, like a little suction cup. You're like, pop it off.
Eventually.
Pop the new one
eventually.
Off. Eventually.
I mean, yeah, what you're talking about will eventually be true.
Right.
It's not true now.
No way. Yeah. I mean,
you have to have an installer come in and do it, and it's very tricky. And can you see... Some people ask, can you see the boundaries between the tiles? Not when there's real content on. Under certain conditions. Like when the whole screen is black.
When it's off.
And when it's off, and you're kind of looking sort of from the side, from an angle... sometimes you can see those tile boundaries.
That's like the Sony booth at CES was like that, because they had a whole like wall of LED, and it was amazing. But as soon as the light went off, you could see the little tiles. You could see the delineation, but only from the angle, like you said, because it's only the light that's reflecting off of it. But when that thing is on, it is mind-boggling how clear it is and how seamless they are. Like, you would think there'd be a tiny little seam.
Yep. Which is why I've never been a fan of people who put up video walls consisting of four or eight or 16 separate TVs, even when they have super tiny bezels.
Right, right.
You still see the boundaries.
Yeah.
That's not interesting to me.
John's asking if you want to stick around for a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Happy to.
Welcome back to The Tech Guy. We're talking about technology. And Eric is on the line in Buena Park, California. Eric, welcome to the show.
Hey, Rich, at the DMV, if you hear any noise in the background.
Oh,
I just had a quick question.
The good news is we have like an hour and a half to talk because you're at the DMV.
I was wondering if I was going to speak with you first or get up to the counter first, and I'm on the phone with you first. So.
Oh, wow, that's a good sign.
I've been trying to look at color printers, and I wanted to get a laser color printer, and I've gotten kind of lost with all the different letters and numbers. I've kind of got a price range of between maybe $200 and $400, $450 max, and I was just looking for a suggestion or guidance or something that I could do besides trying to Google and look on all these different websites.
What are you looking at? What have you narrowed down so far?
So I've found a HP, Canon, I think Ricoh was another one. And as far as that, I really don't have a preference. Just something in between that price range.
And what are you finding about these things? I mean, what are they, you know, it's been a while. I have a regular, like a black and white laser. So I haven't really gone into the color laser. What are you using this for?
Document scanning. So I want to have that document feeder tray and then printing documents that'll be for work. So I needed to have that higher end kind of look and feel that the laser printers, at least from my understanding, give.
And what's sort of the difference? I mean, when you're looking up HP versus Canon, what are you kind of seeing that they're saying the differences are between these things?
I don't see a difference, Rich, to be honest. It really is coming down to maybe the pages per minute is kind of one of the key features, which for me, I really don't mind having a slower printer if it's going to save me $50. I didn't know. My last printer that just took a dump on me was an HP inkjet, and it said that the printheads needed to be done, but it was only like a $60 printer, and my other one was Epson, and that one is, you know, on its last ends as well. So, I mean, with your experience, are printers pretty much all the same, whether the brands are going to be, maybe the different type of photo paper that you're using? Or?
Well, I think what it really comes down to is kind of the features that you need, whether they have those, and then also how much you're going to be paying for replacement cartridges and things. So with laser, as you can imagine, those are going to be pretty pricey for your color laser cartridges, right? So
right. But I'm not using the color that often, though, so that was something that I took into account.
Oh, you're not?
Okay. Or I tried to.
I mean, I'm looking at...
I want to be able to have it.
I'm looking at the website Wirecutter, which I really like. Have you heard of them?
No, I haven't. Okay. I'm looking at like Newegg, Amazon, you know, some apps and stuff. What is it? It's a
Wirecutter. And this is a website. They have these professionals that kind of like, I just interviewed one of them that does headphones, and all she does is test headphones for a living, which is pretty amazing that they have someone, and they have these people in all these different verticals that do a lot of testing. So according to them, they like the HP LaserJet Pro. So that's their favorite, and they tested, I think it says, 40 of them. So, and HP, obviously, that's a brand we've known for a long time. I mean, clearly they're the market leader when it comes to printing, in laser at least. And I think that, the main thing about HP, that the biggest downside is that you know that the printer is going to be a good value, but then when you go to buy the pieces for that printer, it's kind of expensive, right?
So the actual pieces for the printer itself, like if it needs repair?
No, I mean like just like the actual ink and supplies that you need for that printer.
Course.
And you can get really expensive. I mean, obviously the paper you were mentioning, you know, the type of photo paper you're going to be printing on. I mean, you could go as cheap as you want or as expensive as you want with a lot of these different aspects of it. But I think the thing about HP and the big brands you know, you're going to be able to find parts that aren't necessarily the OEMs as well. So if you want to go cheaper and get, like, you know, a refill somewhere that's not necessarily an HP brand, you might be able to do that. Although I'm not sure if this printer does what a lot of things have done, which is they kind of lock you in where you can't use the other third party stuff. I don't know if you've come across that in your printer research.
My HP inkjet one, I did that. I don't know. I went to a warehouse store to get them refilled, and then it gives me these error messages saying it's not an OEM ink cartridge.
So you got to be careful on that one too. So this one that they picked is, let's see, it's about $300.
Signing in day two, please.
Okay.
I think we hear I think your number's up at the DMV.
I'm getting hold up. I'll check out that website though, Rich. I appreciate you giving me the heads up.
All right. Good luck, and let me know what you find. All right. Thanks so much, Eric.
Thank you. Will do.
Okay. Sounds like Eric's getting a new license there at the DMV. I don't know if you know, in California, there's a lot of a DMV is notorious with long lines, but in California particularly, the lines have gotten really, really long. I guess there's something to do with these new IDs that we're getting in California, these real IDs or something. But I just know we've done stories on the news over and over about how the lines have just gotten out of hand. And I keep getting emails from California DMV telling me as a reporter that they're working to try to figure out what's going on here and how they can make things better. So now we have these automated DMV stations as well. Which you can go, and I guess you can go to like a grocery store and renew your license and stuff like that. Or maybe not your license, maybe just your tags or something. But anyway, that was great to have Eric calling from there. Thomas is with us in Vancouver, Washington. Thomas, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Speaking of phones, I saw heard that little wiki mistake that you did with your phone.
Oh, you heard it? Oh no, it went over the whole. So you know, someone messaged me on Facebook Messenger.
Well, I actually didn't hear it, but I heard behind the scenes that you forgot to silence your phone.
Okay. Well, at least I can still say Facebook on the air. At least that doesn't activate anything until next week when they launch their new video chat thing. But anyway, Thomas, what's going on?
Sure. I have a LG Salvo 3 Plus phone, and I'm having issues with my phone's battery charging very slow, and it's extremely slow. I have a turbocharger that came with my phone, and I also bought an Anker wall charger because my friend recommended Anker to me because he likes the product. He has a product of theirs, the portable battery chargers.
Mm-hmm. Anker's a big brand for that.
Even with me switching to a different turbocharge product, it's my phone's still relatively slow.
What phone is this?
It's a LG Stylo 3 Plus.
LG Stylo 3 Plus. And how long have you had this device?
Probably like close to a year, if I'm not mistaken. Probably slightly over a year.
I think there's a couple things that could be going on. Now, you said you tried, you're using the charger that came with it. And when it comes to Android devices, there's a lot of different charging protocols out there. And generally, if you're using the charging cable that came with your device, clearly it should be charging at the fastest possible method, right? But I've seen in my experience, I have a lot of different devices and I have a lot of different ways of charging them, that it's hit or miss. I think in this case, it sounds like you either have something software related that is keeping this thing from charging at optimum speed, or perhaps your battery got damaged in the last year and that's why it's protecting the phone from itself, basically, and maybe some sort of safety there's maybe some sort of safety protocol at work here where the battery or the device software knows that the battery can't handle the fastest possible charge. So I think I'd have someone look at that battery or maybe get a new one if he can. That might be your best bet, Thomas, because you are using the cable that came with it. See if a friend has a cable for an LG phone and try that as well. But it should be charging at full speed because, like me, I like to have my stuff charged because I am using my stuff a lot. You're listening to Rich DeMuro on The Tech Guy, in for Leo Laporte today. We're going to take more of your calls after the break at 888-ASK-LEO. Give me a call. Let's talk tech at 888-827-5536.
Can everybody hear me? Can anybody hear me? Hey, chat room, you there? Can you hear me? Is this thing on?
Yeah, Scott, you're on.
Okay, thank you. Hey, John, how you doing? You've turned your radio down.
I'm good.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Kim. Appreciate it. Fire Ski is asking, I'm trying to decide between an LG OLED B8 or C8, and if the LG SK9 or SK10 soundbar will provide better sound than my old Pioneer VSX51. I have an Oppo UDP 203. Good for you. That Oppo is an excellent player. The Pioneer VSK51 is a receiver, so the question is, what kind of speakers do you have connected to it? Before I answer the question about a soundbar, the question of the B8 or C8 is a good one, and I definitely recommend the C8. The B8 is less expensive, but it's only available in certain stores. I don't remember whether it's Best Buy or Costco or where they sell it, but it's only in specific stores. The bigger issue for me is that the C8 has a more advanced video processor. And so that is why I recommend the C8 over the B8. The B8 has last year's video processor, whereas the C8 and all of the higher-end models in the LG OLED line have this year's brand new processor. I believe it's called the Alpha 9. I forget exactly what it's called, but it's definitely a better processor. So I would definitely spend the extra money on the C8. 5x5 on audio. Thank you, Robert Bigelow. Fire Ski is hoping to take advantage of Atmos as it develops. Ah, well, the VSX51 won't do that. I have to remember now whether the SK9 or SK10 have Atmos built in. I do know that Vizio has just started selling a couple of new soundbars that do have Atmos. And looks like I'm going to be looking at them up at Twit in a couple of weeks. So I'm looking forward to that very much. I forget the model numbers exactly, but one is a 36-inch soundbar with five channels, two surround speakers, three in the front, subwoofer, and two up-firing speakers that give you Atmos by reflecting the overhead sounds from the ceiling. It means you need a flat ceiling. The larger one is, I think, 46 inches, got 5.1, again, five channels around you plus a subwoofer, and four up-firing speakers. Now, that lists for $1,000, so that's pretty expensive. The smaller one is $500, so it depends on what you want to spend. But and Fireski, says Klipsch speakers, 5.1. So that probably sounds really good. That will sound better than a soundbar, except for the fact that you're not going to get Atmos. That older Pioneer receiver does not do Atmos. I'd have to look it up to see how well it does, if it does HDR or ultra high definition UHD Blu-ray, that sort of thing, if it passes that through. If it does, then not having Atmos would be the only problem. If it doesn't, then it really is a problem. Now, Klipsch, I might suggest, instead of a soundbar, since you already have these Klipsch speakers, Klipsch makes what are called Atmos-enabled speakers. So they're little speakers that you sit on top of your Klipsch speakers, and they fire the sound upward and reflect it off the ceiling and bring it down. So you would need to buy two or four of those and a new AV receiver. And virtually all AV receivers these days, except for the very bottom end, now support Atmos. So I would say, instead of letting go of your Klipsch speakers, which are probably pretty good, I would invest in a new receiver and the Atmos up-firing, Atmos-enabled speakers from Klipsch, again, because they make very good ones. I might suggest getting the receiver first if you want to get into Atmos eventually. Take advantage of Atmos as it develops. Then you could get those Atmos up-firing speakers later. Or you could get two of them now and add two later. I prefer having four, ultimately, four overhead sound sources coming down, because that really is a greater sense of envelopment than just having two. Oh, but you're telling me the SK9 and SK10 both have Atmos built in. So that's good. I don't remember whether they have physical surround speakers. They might. But if they have Atmos built in, it's undoubtedly two. Just two up-firing speakers coming up off the ceiling, reflecting off the ceiling. So I still think your better bet, your better investment for the future would be a new receiver. Use your Klipsch speakers and add the Klipsch up-firing Atmos-enabled speakers when you can. That gives you more flexibility as well in terms of connecting other components to the system. I forget whether the SK9, SK10, how many HDMI inputs they have, or whether or not you'd need to use the TV as the HDMI switcher, plug all your sources into the TV. That is fraught with a number of problems, one of which is the TV might or might not, and I don't remember how it is with the LG OLEDs, send the entire Atmos soundtrack that's passing through the TV onto the soundbar. Now, maybe the soundbar has a number of HDMI inputs and you could plug straight into there, and that would be better. That would certainly be better than using the TV as an HDMI switcher. But still, a receiver is better still, is way better than that. So since you already have good speakers, that's my recommendation. Let's see here. The B8 C8. I got that one already. Let's see. Fopo. was asking about 2,000 nit TVs. And there are a few out there. When I was on with Rich, I was talking about TVs.
Got about TVs. Just about a minute here.
Okay, thank you. Normally, I have the timer in the okay. in the
then,
let's see. Window.
This is number one, but, and this is remote PC.
That's okay. Anyway, there are a couple of TVs that do up to 2,000 nits. The Sony Z9F. Can do it, presumably. The Samsung Q9FN, I think, is supposed to get up to around 2,000 nits. And the Vizio PQ65, it only comes in one size, 65 inches, but the PQ is said to get up to 2,000 nits as well. Now, that's a lot less expensive. That's around $2,000. The other two are much more. So, generally speaking, it's a pretty expensive thing to get up to 2,000 nits. And again, don't forget that 2,000 nits is with a small window. That's it.
Welcome back to The Tech Guy. Rich DeMuro filling in for a vacationing Leo Laporte. Thanks so much for joining me to talk technology. Phone lines are open. 8888 Ask Leo. 8888 Ask Leo. And this was a... Well, Saturday, let's see. So we've got a lot of folks playing with their new iPhones, right? We had the iPhone XS and XS Max in stores on Friday. So a lot of people went out and got them. Now, if you looked at the news, you saw the lines were not as long. You know, it used to be you'd go out to these stories, and I've done plenty of them, where you stand outside the Apple store on launch day and you'd see lines around the block. I was at the first original launch of the iPhone. What was it called? Oh, yeah, just iPhone. It was just the iPhone back in 2007, and that was in New York City. And I remember the line outside the store on Fifth Ave in New York City was just insane. And I got to cut everyone, which was really cool because they brought me inside. But and then they asked me if I wanted to buy one, which I also thought was really cool because I didn't think I was getting one that day. But the lines nowadays have died down, not only because everyone's on their own upgrade cycle, but also because people order online. There's a million different ways of getting them. But That's kind of a bigger story of kind of how people are getting their phones these days. Everyone's on their own cycle. You know, it's not just, okay, the new iPhone comes out, I get it that day. People sort of wait until their phone breaks or something goes wrong or they feel like upgrading to upgrade. They don't necessarily have to get it on day one. But there are a lot of people that do, and the reviews are starting to come in. I've got my iPhone XS Max here, loaner from Apple. So full disclosure, I did not stand in line to purchase this, but it is a beautiful device. It reminds me of the iPhone 8 Plus, but with a screen that literally takes up the entire device. And if I thought that I could put my old case on here, it almost looks like you could, but you can't, because it looks like it's the same exact size, but you can't. One of the other people that do this teardown every time a new phone or device comes out is a website called iFixit. And they basically sell all the parts you need to go through and fix your own device, right? But people go through this website and they kind of see what they find when they tear down the new models of things. And I just kind of look through their iPhone XS and XS Max teardowns, which, by the way, I would never do personally. I did replace the battery in one of my devices once. It was an iPod. I think it was just a regular iPod, not even a touch. And I remember the battery went dead or something happened with it. Ordered the kit on Amazon and replaced it. You had to, toughest part was really getting the glue off of the device in a nice way where you didn't mess up everything. But I did it and I was very proud of myself. I won't do that again. And I have not opened up an iPhone personally. But they went through and opened up every little piece of this thing to kind of find what's different, what's new. And here's what they found. An extra antenna band has moved to where the left side mic holes used to be. This might be for the gigabit LTE. So the new iPhones take advantage of faster LTE, which is called gigabit LTE. It's kind of a stopgap between 4G and 5G. So even if you're running the same exact network, say, let's say you're on T-Mobile or Verizon, you actually will experience faster speeds with the brand new iPhone XS and XS Max, which is really cool. Let's see. They say that the new rating of IP68, which means this thing can actually hold its own in water for longer than before. So if you dropped it, the old phone, it would be fine. This one will actually last longer. And they test it with more things too, like beer and wine and soda and coffee. So the IP68 rating means that the water resistance on these new iPhones is a little bit better. Then they looked at the Taptic Engine. So the Taptic Engine is what gives the iPhone that amazing feedback that you feel when you scroll through lists, when you tap things, when you get a text message, and it's better than any device out there. So you think about a phone that vibrates. This is not just a vibration engine. This is a Taptic Engine, which just, there's much more nuance in the vibration you feel on an iPhone compared to other devices out there. And that's because of this Taptic Engine that Apple has created. So inside the XS Max, it's bigger. So I guess bigger phone, you gotta power those vibrations more. So that's why you've got a bigger Taptic Engine in there. Let's see. The extended logic board has one of the display connectors moved to the bottom. Ooh, that's something that all consumers need to know, right? The XS battery looks weird. That's the headline on the that all the reporters picked up after the iFixit teardown. So the battery in the XS actually looks like it's an L shape. So they had to make use, you know, they have to cram all these different components inside these phones. So Apple makes a lot of things custom. So their battery is L shaped in the smaller device. The XS battery is just a normal, XS Max is just a normal shape. The SIM card, I noticed this when I popped my SIM into this phone. Looks a little different, but the other thing is that we've heard about this dual SIM functionality. So you've heard that you can have two phone lines on one device. Number one, that's not available today. It's coming soon in a software update. But number two, you don't actually put two SIM cards in your device. One of them is called an eSIM. So it's actually all activated electronically. So you don't actually put two SIM cards in there. But the one that you do put in, the case that you put it in, the little holder is a little bit different. Now, here's something that's interesting. One thing that Apple did not mention about the new camera. So it's the pixels are 32% bigger, whatever the sensor is 32% bigger. So it turns out that the camera bump is actually a little bit bigger on the iPhone XS. So if you have an iPhone X case, it might not fit on your XS. And if you looked at some of the people on Twitter tweeting about, you know, they got their new phones and let me try my old case. You know, this is what people do when they get these new things. They just try a whole bunch of stuff. So they said you got to be careful because you don't want to ruin your phone by trying to put a case that's too small on your new device. So proceed with caution because the camera bump is a little bigger. And I always joke whenever I'm at these Apple events, you never knew how terrible your phone was until you go to an Apple event, because you never knew all the things that it wasn't capable of. And one of the things that surprised me was when they mentioned, oh, by the way, you can now record in stereo sound with your videos. And I was like, wait, what? My iPhone had not been recording in stereo this whole time? No, turned out it wasn't. So now there's four microphones that are recording in stereo. And so I always joke at these events that they point out all the flaws of the previous devices in order to sell you the new device. And again, it never ceases to amaze me, all the things that I thought were really cool. And then they're like, oh, by the way, that was not very good. Now we've got smart HDR, and it's way better than our old HDR, which I thought HDR was pretty cool. The new iPhone XS, this is always the big question. How big are the batteries inside these iPhones? Because Apple is pretty much the only manufacturer that does not tell you on their spec sheet how big their batteries are. So you got to crack them open to find out. So the iPhone XS has a 2659 milliamp hour battery, weighing 39.5 grams, which is slightly downgraded from last year's 10. Wow. And then the XS Max battery is 3,179 milliamp hours, and that is on par with the Samsung S9 and S9 Plus, but smaller than the Note 9, which is packing a much larger battery. The battery on the Samsung Galaxy Note 9 is, it's almost like 4,000, I think it's 4,000 milliamp hours, which is a ton, and I've been carrying around the Note 9 as well, and that battery is a champ. It lasts for a long time. I think the iPhone batteries last for a long time, but I think that the Note battery is pretty good, especially since some of the Samsungs used to have a reputation, and they still kind of do, for you can just literally use it and watch your battery go down as you use it. Even if you're not using it, your battery used to go down. I think Android's gotten a lot better, but yeah. Despite the many improvements, iFixit says it has the same iPhone 8, iPhone 10 back glass, which means one tiny crack means you got to replace the whole chassis. Not good for there. Apple said the glass on the phone is more durable, but it's the same design. So even though it's more durable, it could still be broken. Do you need to access your PC or Mac while you're away from your home or office? Well, I've got the right product for you. It's called Remote PC. With Remote PC, you can easily and securely access your PC or Mac at home or from anywhere, even with your mobile devices. It's as if you're sitting right in front of your computer, and it's kind of the closest thing to teleporting. Remote PC works great for individuals with home offices or even small to medium-sized businesses. Plans start at less than $6 a month to connect up to 10 computers. And if you use promo code LEO at checkout for the LEO Tech Weekend Special, you're going to get 90% off your first year. This is the best, most affordable remote access service, but don't take my word for it. PC Magazine recently gave Remote PC 4 stars. Along with an excellent rating, PC Mag noted Remote PC is effortless, with a simple interface and learning curve, fast performance, and users can easily transfer files between local and remote desktops. So go to remotepc.com, sign up today with code LEO, and get 90% off. That's 90% off for the LEO Tech Weekend Special. Did you get one of these new fancy iPhone XS's or XS Maxes? Let's talk about it. Tell me how your pictures are looking. Rich DeMuro in for Leo Laporte. You're listening to The Tech Guy. Your calls at 8888 Ask Leo coming up next. Thanks so much for listening to The Tech Guy. Rich DeMuro here filling in for Leo Laporte. And now a message from Leo himself. Hey, Leo.
If you're watching The Tech Guy on the website, twit.tv, not the live stream, but if you're watching the podcast, you're using JW Player. Right now, JW Player. We use JW Player because it's awesome. It replaced FlashForce. It's an HTML5 video platform. It's flexible. We can put out the features we want, features we don't need, we leave out. It can be branded. It looks just like we want it. That's why we use JW Player at twit.tv. We looked at a lot of choices, and that's the one we've used again and again. We come back to JW Player. If you watch video online, you're using JW Player. You may not know it. The best publishers in the business, not just Twit, but Washington Post, Business Insider, Vice. You don't see JW Player. That's, I guess, part of the reason they want you to know about them because it doesn't say that. It says the brand. It says our brand on there. It's white. I guess they call it white labeled, right? Where you know, it's our branding on JW Player. There's actually 500,000 websites that use JW Player to deliver videos to their audiences. You should too if you're thinking about playing back video. Why give YouTube a big bug on your on your website? No, don't use JW Player. From small businesses that want to upgrade from YouTube to large-scale publishers and broadcasters who want to maximize their video ad fill rate and CPMs, JW Player is a solution for you. It is, of all the features on our website, and we spent a long time and a lot of money making that website work, the most important is the ability to watch our shows. If you go right now, you want to see last week's tech guy, you go to twit.tv/TTG. That's the JW Player right there. If you're looking at any of our shows, if you're looking at the video, you're watching JW Player. Buffer-free technology is the fastest player. It's fully customizable, so it matches our brand. They actually provide a video CMS for uploading and managing videos, a powerful and easy-to-use suite of APIs to enhance player functionality and access video analytics. We definitely use that. If you run video ads, you can maximize the fill rate, the CPM. You got to go to jwplayer.com/twit. Use the code TWIT at checkout, and you're going to get a great deal. I don't think we've ever offered a deal this good. 50% off, 50% off your business subscription. But this is a very limited time exclusive offer. You got to do it right now, just for TWIT listeners. jwplayer.com/twit. Use the code TWIT at checkout for half off your business subscription. If you've been thinking, if you've been wondering what to use, this is an absolute personal testimonial because we use it and we love it. jwplayer.com/twit. Use TWIT as the offer code. And it's kind of a nice bonus. You get 50% off. That's pretty good too. Wow. Can I get that? jwplayer.com/twit. Offer code TWIT.
Welcome back to The Tech Guy, Rich DeMuro, in for Leo Laporte. Thanks for being with me on this show. We are talking about technology and how it affects you, what you got. You got some problems, call me up, we can help you. Got some thoughts, share them with me. Got the new iPhone, you can talk about that. Tell me what your pictures are looking like. We are taking calls at 888-ASK-LEO, 1-888-827-5536. Carl is in Upland, California. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm coming along, thank you. Yeah, I called Leo once previously. I wanted to transfer one particular podcast that I go to religiously to different PCs. I was running out of space and I wanted backups. So you know, he just suggested use a flash drive, which I did. But what I find is that when I transfer the information to another PC, I cannot get any audio on that PC unless I plug that flash drive in. There's written dialogue that comes with it, and that's always available. And I thought, well, maybe the PC's out of whack, so I tried it on two other PCs, and it's the same issue.
Is the audio that you're transferring somehow protected by some sort of copyright or DRM?
I don't believe so.
What's the source of this audio?
It's a podcast that I get through iTunes.
So it's a podcast that you get through iTunes. So when you download it in iTunes, you reveal the file in the Finder or in Windows Explorer, and then you take that and you drag it onto this flash drive, and then you bring it to a computer?
Yeah, I use Windows 10, and I would just drag the information. And I've done this with other files, and everything comes out fine, but this one particular podcast... I can get the audio and I can see all the dialogue on the screen if I plug that flash drive into the PC. If I pull that flash drive out, the audio goes away, but I can still look at all the dialogue.
Now, what do you mean look at the dialogue? Where are you seeing dialogue?
Well, it's a language podcast, a language learning podcast. So as they speak the language, you can look at dialogue on the screen.
Well, if I had to guess, I think that the format that they're doing this in might be slightly different. Do you know what the extension of the file is?
No, I don't.
Okay. I think that the format, because it's a interesting kind of podcast that you're talking about where it syncs up video with audio or something on the screen with the audio, it sounds to me like this is not your typical MP3 file or some sort of standard audio file. It sounds like it's something a little bit different. So I think that that's part of the issue. Because, yeah, you can take any file that's an MP3 or some sort of audio format and just drag it to any computer and it should play as long as it's not DRM'd. And you don't even really see that with podcasts most of the time. Why can't you just download this from the computer you want to play it on?
Because some of the podcasts are up to about 10 years old and you can no longer download them. So I've got them on the PC where I've subscribed to it for years, and I just want to maintain that in case one day that PC dies.
Okay. I think what you might want to do to try this is maybe just convert the audio on a... Well, see, but if it's a weird file, you probably won't be able to do that because it'll break the audio-video. You know what I mean? Like the link between mm-hmm. those two files. I think this is a non-standard file. And is there any harm in running it off the flash drive because you can't get it to play on the other computer?
No, but you know, but the idea is if something dies and if I lost the flash drive, well, I've already transferred all the information to another PC, so I'm fine. But in fact, I'm not.
Right,
so
right.
I can't lose the flash drive, yeah.
Because it's not really backed up. You can't really back it up because if I say, hey, back it up by making a copy of it somewhere else, it won't really play, huh?
Correct.
So as soon as you put that flash drive in, I think there's sort of a key, like a third key to this program that's making that magic work between the what you see on screen and what the audio says. And I think that's part of the problem is that there's something going on there that's not standard. And it sounds like that's what's keeping the program from playing on the other computer. The only other thing I can think of is to maybe try a different flash drive and make sure that you're grabbing all of the components of this file. There might be more components to it that you don't notice, and that's what's causing this to not play properly, because there might be a component to it that you're dragging over to the flash drive, but you're not necessarily dragging over to the hard drive. So good question, kind of a tricky one, and it's always frustrating when something like that doesn't work, because you would think with an audio file it'd be pretty simple to just drag and drop, but it doesn't always work that way. Anthony in Chicago, you're on with Rich.
Hey, Rich, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, doing well, thank you. Great job standing in for Leo.
Thank you.
So I have a quick question. I just got an iPhone XS yesterday, 256 gig capacity, and I have an 8 Plus. That's also 256 gig capacity with about 150 gigabytes of photos and videos. I'm a professional photographer by trade.
Okay.
So I have a lot of my videos being 4K, 60 frame per second content. And it takes forever to transfer to the computer. And that's through, like, normally I try to hook it up through image capture.
Mm-hmm. That's what I use.
It's painfully slow. Like, took me, literally, I mounted it yesterday in the morning, and still this morning, it had like 1,800 images and pictures or videos to go.
Well, I think what's happening is, so you're transferring them from the old one to the computer, the 8 Plus?
Yeah, 8 Plus to my iMac.
Well, what it's doing is, I think it's converting those files before it transfers them to your computer, right?
So is there a way to get around that?
Yeah, I believe in the settings... There's a setting, it's either in image capture, but basically there's a setting that says optimize files before transferring, and I think that's what it's doing. What's that?
So that's not with iCloud.
No, that's not with iCloud. This is actually happening on your phone. So it's basically before it's transferring those pictures, it's converting them into a format, because Apple, remember, they changed the format of the way they take pictures. You're a professional photographer. You probably know better than I do.
Right.
But they did that whole... If you go into your camera and then format says high efficiency or most compatible, right?
Yeah, yep, yep.
And so if you're on high efficiency, whenever you use image capture, it's actually doing a quick transformation of that file into a better format for your computer and for sharing. So your trick is to actually turn that off and to make it so that it just transfers it as the regular file. Now, the problem with that is that you may not be able to use these files in as many places because they're going to be those weird formats that aren't as compatible. Does that make sense?
I think what I'm having more trouble with, though, is the video. The videos seem to take forever.
That's what I'm saying. Those are the ones that are the problem, because they're in that high efficiency format. And if it's a you know, 40 or 50 or 2 minute video, it's got to convert that entire video to a new format. So that's
most compatible.
Yeah, that's what I would do is choose most compatible, but you have to make sure, do a little searching on Google, but just figure out the way that you transfer these photos from image capture. Make it so that it's not transcoding these into a new format, and that will definitely speed things up because that's really where it's lying, is in that transformation of that file. Good question, and one that a lot of people probably may not have, because not everyone has 150 gigs to transfer over. Rich DeMuro in for Leo Laporte. Your calls coming up at 8888 Ask Leo. More tech questions after this. You still there, Anthony?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. Hey, so sorry I had to go for the break, but does that make sense? Right. You know what I would do? There's a couple other. You still there?
Yeah, I was going to say, is it too late though now? I mean, if I change that setting, is it essentially for one?
That's for going forward. But I remember there being, and I don't have I don't have my plug for my phone, but I feel like even in image capture, there was an option to trans. Here, let me see. Image capture trans.
Well, I talked to a senior advisor that from Apple, and he suggested essentially to turn on, you know, the iCloud photo storage and just have on my Photos app download.
Of course, that's his solution because that costs money. here you go. There you go. Keep originals option. So there is a iPhone settings. Here we go. I got it right here. iPhone settings, photos, transfer to Mac or PC, switch from automatic to keep originals. That's what you want to do. And once you switch to keep originals, it will no longer transcode those, and it's going to come over in 2 seconds versus, 5 minutes.
So can you tell me where that is again? So
yep.
Where are you?
Go to iPhone settings.
Okay. Yep.
Okay. Photos.
Yep.
So hold on. I'm following it on my phone too. So let me get there. Okay. Photos. And it says transfer to Mac or PC. It says keep originals. So you want to click that and then now plug into image capture, and everything will come over super fast.
Steve, so keep originals.
Yep.
Not automatic.
Yeah, because see what it says underneath there? Automatically transfer photos in a compatible format. So
it's doing a conversion process the entire time.
Exactly. For every file that you're sending over. So that's okay. A lot of time.
So that's it, basically. The keep originals.
That's it.
Be a lot more efficient.
Now plug it in. And watch how fast it goes compared to the old way.
All right, I love you.
All right, good luck, and let me know. Let me know if that works. Send me an email. RichOnTech.tv is my website. I want to know. Okay?
All right, cool. Thank you, Rich.
All right, thanks, Anthony.
Yeah, aloha, brother. Thank you.
All right, look at that. Making dreams. Too bad that it wasn't on the air, but you know, it takes a little second to find the exact things to do when you're on time here. But yes, that's what I remember when the iPhone 8 first came out. That was a big problem, was all that transferring, because it was really a problem. Welcome back to The Tech Guy, the show where we talk about technology, answer your calls, talk about the latest gadgets, apps, whatever you need help with, we can talk about that as well. We're taking calls at 8888-ASK-LEO, 8888-ASK-LEO. Rico is in Cerritos, California. Rico, welcome to the show.
Hey, Rich, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
This is Rika. Hey, thanks a lot for standing in for Leo.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad Leo gives me the opportunity. It's always fun to sit at his desk and just feel the power, you know?
That's awesome. Hey, I got a question. I'm attempting to replace the screen on my, cracked screen on my MacBook Air. It's 11-inch, and the glass, no problem. I've got the glass off, but there's a layer, a couple layers of, I call it LCD, underneath the glass. And I need to know, where can I purchase those layers? Because I actually touched one of the layers and my fingerprints on it. So I want to replace the layer. And is there a way of doing that? Because I'm not a replacement. I don't want to replace the whole assembly.
Right.
I'm actually trying to replace the layer of the LCD.
Right. Well, I was talking about this website before, iFixit.com, and they are the authority with all these repairs. So what they do is they basically break down everything and tell you exactly how to repair stuff, give you all the tools you need to do it. So if anyone's going to have it, they're going to have it, or at least tell you what you need. So if you look at this, if you look at their website, they'll kind of go through all the different repairs that they have on there. YouTube obviously is a good solution to look for things, but the exact part that you're looking for, it may not be replaceable, because a lot of these pieces are sort of fused together. Now, I know my kid threw a toy at my MacBook, my brand new MacBook Pro. It was only like a couple months old, and it cracked the whole screen, and I had to get that replaced. And I did it myself, all by myself. I went to the Apple Store, I dropped off my MacBook Pro, and I said, hey, can you fix this? And they did. And it was pretty interesting how fast that process was. They said I'd be out of my MacBook for a week. It was really only, I think it was like 2 or 3 days. So I was very impressed with their repair process. Of course, that cost me $500. And my favorite repairs, by the way, are always the ones that take you back to the beginning. So you've spent all this money, but nothing's changed. So my computer is the exact same computer. It's now, instead of the $2,000 I spent on it, it's now a $2,500 computer. It doesn't do anything different. In fact, the screen, after they repaired it, does this weird thing where it looks like a TV screen. Remember the old static on TV screens? When I open my MacBook, that's on the screen for like a second or two, which is clearly something to do with the repair that they did on my computer. Now, it's not enough for me to bring it back to them. But I don't know. I think you're very brave for trying this repair by yourself. I think you've gotten to a pretty decent point. But I think the iFixit.com website is probably going to be the best for you. But the reality is, you may not be able to get a replacement part for that, because it might be one of those parts that is, you know, it's integral to the other part. You know, they might be shipped together. You know, they might not ship those things separately. The other website I like, and I don't know if they have any sort of LCD stuff, is OWC, which is, they go by maxsales.com. And this is a great website. May not have the LCD parts that you want, but for the rest of you that are looking for parts and things for your Macs, this is a fantastic website. And in fact, I have upgraded the hard drives on my MacBook. I think it was the Air, or maybe it was the Pro back in the day, by using this website. And anytime that you go on one of these journeys to kind of do it yourself, it's gotten better, believe me, with the YouTube videos out there, with all the tutorials out there. It's gotten a lot better since the day that I replaced the battery on my iPod, because there was literally the instructions in the little kit that I bought off Amazon. That was it. There was nothing to watch on YouTube. But now you've got a lot of stuff. So what I always do is I watch a bunch of videos and I see kind of like what the common threads are with all those videos. So if they're replacing the LCD on a MacBook Air 11 inch like you are, see how they do it and watch the steps. And everyone's going to do things a little bit differently, but you can notice the patterns, Rico, of how these people do things, you know, and what you're talking about, the fingerprint, you know, half the people that replace it may never mention that, but then one person does. And he says, oh, and by the way, while you're pulling this part off the LCD, make sure you do not get your fingerprint on there, because you might not be able to do anything about replacing that one part. So check those two websites, maxsales.com. I don't think they're going to have the LCD parts you need, but iFixit will definitely give you some insight into the MacBook Air 11 inch and see what you can do about that. But you are a brave man, because one thing goes wrong with these things and that's it. And then, you know, then you've invested all this time and effort, and now you've got to bring it somewhere to still have it repaired, which is not fun either. Let's go to Lake Forest, California. Nam, you're on.
Hi, Rich. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, thanks. I have a question for you. I have an Samsung S2 tablet.
Okay.
And I'm looking at the new S4. And then I know it's pricey, you know, into the laptop range. Is it worth it
to upgrade to that S4.
What do you need out of it?
I don't know. Probably more improvement on the screen, a little faster. That's about it. Nothing much.
So better screen. You just want an upgrade. You're just wanting to upgrade.
Right.
So I will say, I mean, this is the Samsung S4 tablet. Starts at $650, right?
Right.
And are you getting it with cellular or no cellular?
No, it's not. Just Wi-Fi. Straight.
So you're looking at, 64 gig. So, I mean, then you got to add, are you going to add a keyboard cover?
Not. Probably down the line, maybe.
I mean, is there anything in this tablet that justifies the $650 price tag for you?
That's what my question is. That actually worked real good.
I don't think so.
I tried the S3 before, and it was heavier than the S2. That's why I didn't like it.
So now, I know everyone's going to get on me for saying what's wrong with an iPad because, you know, they're going to call me the Apple fanboy, but I'm not. But I'm just, when it comes to tablets, I do believe that the iPad is the best tablet out there for a dedicated tablet. I'm not talking two-in-ones like the Surface. Is there a reason why the $329 iPad doesn't work for what you need?
I like to add, modify thing a little bit. So, well, my daughter and my wife, they both have iPads. So, I mean, iPads we have at home, so no big deal. I'm the only one that the oddball used the Samsung.
I will be honest. I mean, I love the Samsung Galaxy lineup of phones. I think they're doing great things. And I think that the their Android tablets are nice. But let's be honest, the Android tablet has not really taken off in any sustainable way. You know what I mean? We have them, but they're not really popular. So I feel like when it comes to the apps, especially that you're running on this thing, you're going to find such better apps for the iPad. You're going to find so many more accessories. This particular tablet, you know, people were basically reviewing it saying that it's not really worth that $650 price tag. And I'm personally not seeing that. I mean, I know it comes with the pen. So, you know, if you think about it that way, the pen for the iPad is another $100. So, you know what I mean? You're looking at $430 versus $650. I think that you'd be better served in the ecosystem with an iPad. And I'm not saying that because, you know, I'm against Android. I'm just saying that the Android tablets just, they don't bring to the table what the iPad does. And when you have a lot of people using something and a lot of developers developing for something, a lot of accessory makers making stuff for that, it just makes for an all-around better product at, by the way, a cheaper price. Thanks for the call. Rich DeMuro in for Leo Laporte today. More of your calls at 8888-ASK-LEO after the break. Oh, we're debating the tablets. Let's see. Fire tablet? Yeah, I guess if I had to recommend one Android tablet, probably be the Fire tablet. But I don't know. I feel like, I mean, unless you're really into the Amazon ecosystem, but what can you get? I mean, I guess the price is better. Let's see how much their top tablet is. Amazon Fire tablet. Let's see. They have one as low as $35. Oh my gosh, that's crazy. Okay, so their Fire HD 10, which I think is their top of the line, is $109. I mean, that's way cheaper than $600. But again, I was trying to figure out what Rico was going to get from that $650. I just think it sounds like a lot for a tablet. I mean, I barely use my tablet. The Nexus 7 was a great tablet. I did like that. That was the Asus one, right? Wasn't it? I think this is it right here. Is this it? I think this is the Fire Kids tablet with the replacement. I don't know. I feel like for my kids, the iPad is still better because, it's those apps. It really comes down to the apps and ecosystem. But yes, the replacement warranty is a really cool deal, that's for sure. Welcome back to The Tech Guy. I'm Rich DeMuro, filling in for a vacationing Leo Laporte. Phone lines are open. You can get in right now. 8888-ASK-LEO, 1-888-827-5536. We are talking about technology, gadgets, computers, websites. Does anyone say that anymore? Websites, apps. Most people are talking about apps, I think. Whatever you want. Yes, I'm in for Leo Laporte today. I'm the tech reporter at KTLA News Channel 5 in Los Angeles. So you can find more about me at richontech.tv. And the website here for the show is techguylabs.com. What's cool about that website is basically anything you hear mentioned on the show, let's say it's an app or a website or something that we mention, you can go and just do a keyword search and find not only what the person asked, but also what we've recommended to them. And by the way, this goes back a while, so you can research a lot of stuff. It's a great website just to research almost anything that you need help with. So that's kind of cool. Speaking of help, Dan is in New Jersey, my home state. Dan, welcome to the show.
What do you know about that? Hi, Rich. You're doing a fantastic job. I'm very impressed.
Thank you. Where in New Jersey?
I'm in Montclair, New Jersey.
Oh, I'm from Clifton, which is right next door.
Oh, that is right next door.
Do we know each other?
You're my brother. I forgot. That's right.
No, it's actually anyway. Dan DeMuro. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, that's funny, too. My parents are elderly, and they want to have... they can't get up and answer the door like they used to. And when the doorbell rings, and so they want two things. They'd like to be able, they do have an iPad. So they'd like to be able to see who is at the door. And they would like to be able to unlock the door for a friendly face. And I did some research, and all I could find was like companies that would do one or the other. Let's say they would have the doorbell camera, or they would have the lock. But I was just wondering, I couldn't seem to find somebody that did one together. It doesn't really matter. I can get two different devices, but I was hoping that maybe there was something to be more coordinated. I have a Schlage Sense lock, which I love, which I use with my iOS device. They also have an Apple TV, so that I know that would work in tandem with that. But if there's some kind of a suggestion for either two different good devices or one maybe that's kind of coordinates together, wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, I personally use the. I understand what you're saying. There's like various products that will do these both of these things. Here's the thing, though. I mean, how tech savvy are your parents, and how willing are they to, kind of own this setup? I mean, are they going to be okay with all this?
Well, that's a whole other question. My father should be able to do it. I mean, they want to be able to see who's at the door, and I know, by the way, I have a $200 coupon from Verizon to buy any Nest product, so I could, get the Google Nest, doorbell. But also then, I mean, what happens if they find it's a friendly person? They have to go down the stairs.
Right.
And so they would like to be able to see that person and then just say, or hit the button and unlock the door, And I think, in a way, I don't see it. It's two steps almost, I think they could do it. I'm going to have to assume, at least.
Well, I mean, I think that there's ways of getting these products to work in tandem to do this. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there's a product that I was thinking, because I know there's a product called Nest IQ, which actually kind of recognizes familiar faces. And I think if you wanted to, you could probably make it so that that could recognize a familiar face and unlock your door. I think you could do that. I'm not 100% sure, but the reality is you don't want something that's fully automated because you don't want, you don't want the door to open up. The second thing is that your parents,
They might know who it is, right? It might be a new person, but who they know is coming over.
Right, right. But the reason I bring up, are your parents accepting of this is because, I cut the cord for my mom back in New Jersey, and it was great. We had a celebration. We ditched the cable box, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it came to... oh, why isn't this working? Wait a second. And it just,
right.
And it really, it's become a kind of, not a huge problem, but there's been some issues where, it's tough to do tech support from, 3,000 miles away when something is physically going wrong with the device, and you're sitting there saying, okay, now unplug the box. Well, now what does that mean? Right. To us, you may understand. you may understand, Dan, because you're smart and you're a tech person, but your parents, who I'm not saying aren't smart, but they're not necessarily techies, to them, when you say, okay, now you have to, you got to close out the app on your iPad because it's not responding, you know, they might not know what that means. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Oh, exactly. I know. So, I once was helping my mother-in-law who lived in Florida, you know, doing things from afar, and I was almost, I was thinking about killing myself, you know.
Oh gosh, don't go that far. I think that it's going to be a two-step process. I think you can do two things with them. I think that you probably want to get something, you have to kind of decide, do you want to get the Ring doorbell or do you want to get the Nest, the Hello, video doorbell. Nest is newer, but, you know, it's clearly owned by Google, so it's going to work with Google Assistant pretty well. And I think what you need is you need to have that set up so you have it so when someone rings, they can see it on their screen. And I would actually probably go with a dedicated screen where they're not just using the tablet that they use every day to kind of like look at the news and stuff. Like I have a tablet that's sitting on my counter that has the video screen. So that way it's easier and, you know, or if you don't even want to do the doorbell, maybe they have a regular doorbell, but they just have a camera that's set up that they can view at all times. You know, I also have that outside my front door where I just have a video feed. That might be your better bet because then they don't have to do anything with the video side of things. Cause even with the Nest and the Hello, you're still going to have to, look at something. And the one cool thing about the Nest actually is that the Nest will, send you a snapshot of the person that's kind of in front of the camera. So you could do it that way where they get a notification to their iPad. They can see the little person, a picture of them, and then they can go and unlock the door. But I think you're going to do two separate things. I personally would have one set up where it's just a stream of outside their front door. Someone rings their doorbell, which could be their regular doorbell. And then once they do that, all your parents have to do is open up an app on their iPad to unlock the front door. And when it comes to that, or you could take it a step further and you can actually get them a Google Home Mini or, an Amazon Echo, and they can just do a voice command to unlock the front door. And you could easily set that up with a million different locks. You said you have, I forget which one you said you had, but you've got all these different locks available that you can use. And those are that's a pretty simple setup. So I think it's a two-part setup. Make the video part easy. Or you can make the video part, a little bit more complicated by getting the Ring and the person rings the doorbell. They see the video, they swipe to see the video. If they like the person, then they can call out to their smart home speaker and it will unlock the door. Now, of course, with any tech setup, there's going to be potential issues. So you can't just rely on this 100%. But I think, Dan, that that's going to be probably the best setup, for your parents. How's that sounding to you?
That's intriguing. The only question I have, which I don't quite understand, is if they have, let's say, the camera, is it like you said, you had a dedicated screen all the time?
Right.
It's always on. So that's just always on, like in the kitchen or something?
Yeah,
like that?
Exactly. Just always on.
Whoever goes by.
Never goes off. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that just has to be someplace where they can see it.
Yeah, exactly. Like put it on their, if they're sitting in the living room, I think maybe an old tablet. That you repurpose as a streaming device. It's almost like a window outside their front door. I think that's the best way. You want to keep things as simple as possible. If they're swiping to answer the door on Ring to look who the person is, waiting for that video to come up, and then they have to call out and unlock the door or go to a different app on the iPad, it's just way too complicated. And you have to think, technology is amazing, but we don't want to get to a point with it where you're going to frustrate your parents and you're trying to make things easier for them, not more frustrating. And you don't want to get to the point where they feel bad asking you for help about this stuff because they can't figure it out. And then you come there 6 weeks later and you say, hey, what's going on? How's everything working? Oh, we haven't answered the door in 2 months because we didn't want to bother you. All right, Dan in Montclair, New Jersey. Thanks so much for the call. Welcome back to Hour 3 of The Tech Guy, show where we talk about technology and take your calls live. My name is Rich DeMuro, filling in for Leo Laporte today. So happy to be with you to talk about my favorite topic, technology. We're going to take your calls at 8888-ASK-LEO, 1-888-827-5536. I'm the tech guy at KTLA 5 in Los Angeles. You might have seen me on TV there. I also blog at richontech.tv. And, you know, I use the Instagram once in a while, at Rich DeMuro. Or, oh my gosh, what am I? I don't even remember what I am on Instagram. It's at richontech. I've got two out of the three. I need to align them all. They're all Rich on Tech on Facebook and Instagram, but my Twitter is still Rich DeMuro. So I need to change my Twitter to Rich on Tech just to make life easier. And I could just say Rich on Tech across all platforms. But if you want to see one of the pictures I took with my new iPhone XS Max, you can check it out. I took this yesterday. Now, I will tell you, I don't put too much stock into pictures that were taken at twilight, you know, at sunset, because they all look fantastic no matter what phone you take them on. I think this one looks particularly good. You can see it there. And what I like about it is the iPhone has added something called Smart HDR, and it actually is making a difference. I think that the photos are looking a bit crisper than before. And this is something that the Pixel has a very particular quality about it, the Google Pixel phone, where pictures just look very crisp. Like, there's a lot of detail in them in all aspects of the picture. And I have not seen that on many other devices. And now I think the iPhone is actually starting to do that as well. And Apple added some smarts into the camera to make that happen. And I actually think they delivered on it. So you can check out the picture I took, see what you think. I think it's looking pretty good. I think that the low light stuff is looking a lot better on the iPhone XS. And I think that the selfies, I didn't really see a big difference on those. But selfies on the iPhone are hit or miss. This I thought was really neat. Now, I was a TiVo guy back in the day. I loved TiVo. I literally will never forget, I was actually late to work the day that I bought it. I paid $800, by the way, at a time when I could not afford $800. I was making, you know, minimum wage as a reporter in Yakima, Washington. But I splurged on this thing. And I ordered it from a website. I probably can't even say it because I don't know what the website is anymore. Let me just check to make sure that it's not something bad. Okay. I think the website was like 800.com or something. And it was like an electronics website. This was back in the day when they had a lot of different websites, not just Amazon, to shop for electronics on. And I ordered it from there, I think probably because they had like free overnight shipping or something. Long story short, I stayed home, or I was late to work because I set up this TiVo. It took so long. You had to plug in a phone line. But it was so magical to me, that experience, because I had grown up with TV. And to pause live TV was such a game changer, or to record TV easily. Yeah, without, of course you could do it with a VCR, but nobody ever really did that. I mean, some people did, clearly, but to be able to do what you did when the DVR came along, specifically TiVo, blew my mind. And I'll never forget, I invited all my friends over that week that I got this thing, all my reporter friends up in Yakima, and I actually had everyone sit down. We were watching Survivor. That was the big show. And I'll never forget, just in the middle of the party, the get-together, just casually pausing live TV and just watching the reactions on their face, because now that's not a big deal. We all do that everywhere. But to be able to do that back in 2000 with the TiVo that nobody had heard of was just mind-boggling. And that's why I am in love with what Amazon is introducing. They're basically bringing back kind of a stripped down version of the TiVo. It's called Fire TV Recast. And I'm sort of split on this thing, and you guys can tell me what you think. I think that this could be either amazing or it could be too late. I think it might be more towards the amazing still. So this is a DVR that lets you watch and record live over the air TV. And get this, no monthly fees. So TiVo was sort of like, they followed the Razor model. You bought the TiVo. Yeah, it was expensive when it first started, but then it got cheaper and cheaper. But they would really get you on the subscription, right? I think it was $20 a month, $12.95 a month, whatever, $9.95 a month, whatever it was. It just kept getting more and more expensive, right? And then the people that had Lifetime, they would, you know, wouldn't transfer to the new box or whatever they got. Anyway, this has no monthly fees, which is amazing. So you pay for the box, you set up this little DVR somewhere in your house. It doesn't have to be near your TV. And that's one part of the brilliance of it, because where your TV is not necessarily the best reception if you're trying to set up an antenna easily in your house. And now they've got these antennas. One I like is called the Mohu Glide or the Mohu Leaf. And you just basically put it on your wall. And it doesn't have to go outside. It doesn't have to be fancy. But there is usually a place in your house, or for a lot of houses, where you can get some decent reception. And you'd be surprised. You get some really nice, clear HD programming from the major networks. ABC, CBS, Fox. If you're in LA, you can get KTLA, the station I work for. And what's great about this is once you set this up, now you can record stuff to this DVR and you can watch it anywhere in the house. So you can stream the shows to your tablet. You can stream them to your phone. You can watch them on your TV using a Fire TV. Of course, Fire TV right now. They did not mention any support for Chromecast, Roku, or Apple TV, which would be really nice. But I won't hold that against them because this is just the start. Hopefully, they will add that later. But there you have it. I mean, how cool is that? So imagine you can now, a lot of people are in this weird place with cord cutting because they want to cut the cord, but they don't want to lose their local sports. They don't want to lose their local news, right? We still watch that live most of the time. And it's complicated because you can get an Apple TV box. And personally, I have an antenna hooked up to that using a separate program. And you can get, there's other competitors like a company called Tableau, Channel Master. They all make these DVRs that work with over-the-air programming. But not a lot of people have adopted it. And I think now that Amazon has sort of pushed this into the spotlight, you're going to get a lot of people that are doing this. And it doesn't cost that much. I mean, the box is expensive, right? So the box starts at $230 for a 500 gigabyte two-tuner model. So that will allow you to record up to 75 hours of HD shows with two tuners. So that means two shows at once. That's great. $280 gets you a terabyte of storage. You can record up to four shows at once, and that holds up to 150 hours of programming in HD. That's $280. Now, Amazon says support for external hard drives is coming soon. And they're going to be able to just add those to the USB. But additionally, you can also stream these recordings out of your house to your device. So let's say you're out and about with your phone, you can still call back to this recast device anywhere you are. Now, I would have liked them to add downloads. I don't know why they did not add downloads. I remember with TiVo, this was such a big thing where you couldn't download your shows for so long. Eventually you could, but it was very tough to do. Why is Amazon not making this simple to do? I want to hop on a plane. Let me download the last five episodes of the show I'm currently watching, right? It's good for everyone. I don't know why they're not doing that. Maybe that'll come in the future. The other cool thing with this is that you can actually use to set recordings and to record shows, to tune in channels. I just think this sounds great. Again, it's called the Fire TV Recast. And this is a DVR that lets you record over the air. And I think that many, many people could do with just this DVR and a Netflix subscription. That's it. And be perfectly happy with all the programming they get for free. I'm Rich DeMuro in for Leo Laporte today on The Tech Guy. We'll take more of your calls at 888-ASK-LEO. 888-ASK-LEO. I want to hear from you. Give me a call right now. Welcome back to The Tech Guy. Rich DeMuro in for Leo Laporte today. We're taking your calls at 888-ASK-LEO. 888-ASK-LEO. Let's see. Ed is in Illinois. Ed, what's going on?
There.
Welcome to the show.
Wait, it didn't go off.
Hello.
My question, I have to be stuck with the speaker. I switched over to Proton Mail.
Okay.
But I also have Gmail. Now, the Gmail is telling me when I have something on Proton Mail, so it's hooked to it somehow. And it's trying to trick me into opening up under Gmail, which would give Google my access to my Proton Mail account. How do I scrub that blasted cockroach called Google off my devices?
So you've got Google. How? Okay. I take it you don't have stock in Google. You're not a fan of Google. So how is it giving you a notification on your computer? Is this a Mac? Is this a PC? How is it telling you that you have a Gmail?
Well, it's on my laptop.
Okay, so you're on your laptop. So
and the Proton Mail is on my desktop.
Okay, so you have Proton Mail as a separate app on your computer, and you've got Gmail on your computer. Here's what I think is happening. Is it a Mac or a PC?
It's a PC.
Okay. I think you signed in with your Gmail account on your Windows computer. Have you ever added your Gmail account to your Windows computer?
No.
Well, how are you checking your Gmail on your Windows computer?
I have to sign in each time.
You sign in. On the web browser?
Yeah.
Okay, what web browser are you using?
Firefox.
Okay. So it could be that you're getting a notification generated from the Gmail website. Is that what I'm understanding?
That's right on the Gmail.
So it's coming from Firefox.
No, it's coming from Gmail.
Right, through Firefox as a notification, right? So I think that you need to sign out of Gmail, because what happens is these new websites can send you notifications through the web browser, and that's what's happening with your Gmail. So what's happening is you're still logged in to your computer. You're still logged into Gmail on your computer. So once you log into Gmail, it basically stays there until you specifically log out. So what I would do is go to Gmail on your Firefox, which is mail.google.com or gmail.com. And then in the right-hand corner, you'll see a little picture of yourself. And it says your account, and it says sign out. And once you click that, you will be signed out of that account on your computer. Now, you could take it a step further, and you can actually go on the login screen on Google, and if it still shows your picture, there's an option to get rid of that, and it says like completely sign out, and you can do that. That's what I would do if you really want to get rid of Google 100% on your device. But I thought, Ed, you were going to say that you're using Chrome, and if you were, that's, you know, Google product clearly, and that's going to be still your link to Google. But interesting question. Proton Mail, for those of you that don't know, is a email based in Switzerland, and this is encrypted email, and it's got end-to-end encryption, which means when your emails pass from your computer to the computer on the other end, they are being encrypted the entire way, which means there is, I'd say no chance, but there's always a chance, but there's less of a chance that anyone can read or intercept your email and understand what you're saying in that email. And this is a much more anonymous email than Gmail. Gmail is very popular, but it is a Google product. And what does Google do? They use information about us to make money off of us. And it used to be that Google would read through your email to scan it for ad purposes. They no longer do that. So Google, that was how it started, is it used to actually have a little strip of ads at the top of it, at the top of your inbox, and it used to read what you said in your email. And I say read, computers are doing this. People were not reading your email. But a computer would scan your inbox, see what you're talking about, and then it would actually serve up ads based on what you're talking about. It no longer does that. But the new thing that people are concerned about when it comes to Gmail is this idea of third-party companies scanning your Gmail. So Google no longer scans it to form opinions about you and to sell you ads, but that does not keep third-party companies from doing that. An article in USA Today talking about how Google said they will still allow third-party developers to scan data from Gmail. And what does this mean? Well, for instance, I use an app called TripIt, and I've connected TripIt to my Gmail account. And what does TripIt do? Well, TripIt goes through my Gmail account and it looks for any travel-related emails. And when it finds one, it will interpret the information off that email and put it in my TripIt account. So does it see all my emails? Yes, it sees all the emails that I write. Does it care about the rest of them? No. Now, does that mean that it's not interested in those other emails at all? Probably not. But If you're the company, TripIt, think about it. You need to understand these travel emails. You need to understand a bunch of different emails coming from a bunch of different places. So you need to understand an email from United Airlines versus an email from Aunt Edna that's talking about travel. And Google is getting a little bit of heat for this because they're saying, look, we're still allowing this third-party access. But in reality, they sort of have to if you want to expand the functionality of your email system, right? So I choose to have TripIt look at my email. But if you want to see what you have on your email, you have to look at something called third-party connected apps for Gmail. So just do a Google search for that, right? And next thing you know, it will show you on your Google account where to go. And you can see apps with access to your account. That's basically the apps, all the apps on Google that can access your account. And if you go, I'll give you the shortcut. It's myaccount.google.com/permissions. And you can scroll through, and I'm looking at this. I have a lot of apps. I've got a journal. I've got a radio app. I've got McDonald's. I've got a movies app. I've got TrueCar. TrueCar can actually just get my email address. And then there's even more, and it keeps going on and on and on. And some of them have, like Chromecast has full access to my Gmail account. And you can go through and you can actually remove the apps that you don't want to have access to your account. So again, that's called permissions generally. And this one is for Google, but you can actually look this up for Facebook. You can look it up for Twitter. You can look it up for Instagram. Third-party apps that have access to your account. It adds a lot of functionality, but sometimes you might not want it. Rich DeMiro here on The Tech Guy, filling in for Leo Laporte. You can give me a call. Let's talk tech. 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Your calls about tech after this. You guys listening on the chat room, that was an interesting one because if he is... It didn't make sense, everything that he was saying, but it, I mean, it does make sense if he's getting the, I think there was two things going on. He could have signed in on Windows and that's where he was getting the notifications, but he said he wasn't. So that's what confused me because I thought it was just a Windows thing, but it could have been a Firefox thing. But generally, if you don't have the website active, they're not going to send you a notification, but perhaps they can. And maybe they do. I mean, it is Gmail. What's going on? Rich DeMiro here on The Tech Guy, filling in for Leo Laporte. Welcome back to the show. We are talking about technology and all the stuff happening in your lives around technology. Maybe you have a problem with it. Maybe you got a question. You need an app to do something. You just got the new iPhone. You're having a problem trying to decide between iPhone and Android. The Note versus the Note 9 versus the iPhone XS Max. Give me a call. 888-ASK-LEO is the phone number, 888-827-5536. Sherry is in Los Angeles. You're on the show. Welcome.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I work with special ed kids, and I wanted, right now I'm taking my Mac Air back and forth to work. I'd rather not do that because it's expensive. So I was looking at Chromebooks. I was interested in a 13 or 15-inch with touchscreen.
Okay.
And I had been looking, I want something not too expensive, like $350, no more than that. I was looking at the Acers, but I didn't know if you might have another recommendation.
My recommendation, Chromebooks are, the thing about Chromebooks is you have to be very careful about not getting one that's too underpowered. Because it will, there's two things, there's kind of a couple things that with Chromebooks you want to watch out for. So number one, if you're not familiar with the concept of a Chromebook, if you work in a school, you definitely are because they're all over schools, right? And so a Chromebook is basically a product that looks like a laptop, but it doesn't have Windows on it. It has a Chrome operating system, which is Google's operating system. And if you've used the Chrome web browser, it's almost very identical to that, except it's running an entire computer. And what's the benefit of that? Well, it's a lot cheaper. And so these Chromebooks generally cost, I mean, you can get them as cheap as $200 and they go, you know, maybe up to $500, something like that. If you get Google's, you can, the Pixelbook, which is theirs, that one's a lot more expensive. You're going to pay, you know, $1,000 for that one. So we're not talking about that one. We're talking about the typical Chromebooks. And the other benefit to these is that there's no viruses and they are always updated. So there's no, you know, with Windows, if you have Windows 10 or if you have a Mac computer, you're always updating the software with these giant software updates, right? Well, the way a Chromebook works is it kind of does all the background downloading of the software updates. And then when you turn it on or you restart it, it kind of installs all these little updates. And so you really don't have to do much. You might get a notice once in a while to restart it to help you install those updates if you haven't done that in a while. But they're pretty seamless. And that's why people like them. They're simple. The downside to them is that you can't install third-party apps that are not Android apps or Chrome apps. So if you have a particular program you need to run for school or for work, that's a, you know, you run it off a CD or you download it. It's a very specific program that was made for Windows. You can't run that on a Chromebook. So with that said, Sherry, I think my recommendation always with the Chromebooks is to go to Costco and buy the Chromebook they have there. Are you a Costco member by any chance?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Have you seen the Chromebooks there?
No, I've looked at other big box stores and a couple office type supply stores, but not Costco yet.
Well, I think the problem with these, the big box stores and the other office supply stores is that they're marking up the price of these things. You're basically getting a lower end specs for an expensive price. And yeah, the prices are not bad. You might see it for $180, but what you're getting might not be that good. So my recommendation always with the Chromebooks is to go to Costco because they literally have the best specs that you're going to get for that price. So you may find a Chromebook at Costco for $289, but you're getting the equivalent of a $400 Chromebook anywhere else. So it's a great delineation there. The things you want to look out for on the Chromebook are really the processor. You want to make sure that it's a decent processor and also a decent screen. And it also depends what you get on this thing. So a lot of the popular models are the Asus of the world, ASUS. Those are popular. Also the Acer. Those are popular. A lot of people like the Acer Chromebooks. They're a big maker of Chromebooks, but you have to be careful. Again, you want to make sure that you get one that is a good quality Chromebook. And so you're going to pay a little bit more for that. So I would not go for the one that is the cheapest. But if you're going to Costco, again, a $300 model will really, really get you pretty far. Is there anything specific, Sherry, that you have been confused about when you're comparing these things?
It just gets overwhelming.
Yeah.
Because when I go on the different, you know, like Amazon or the different websites looking at customer reviews, I get overwhelmed. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, I'm looking at the Acer website, right? So, I mean, you've got, you know, here's an example, and this is probably why you're confused. Here's what it describes. Chrome OS, Intel Celeron, N3350 processor, dual core, yep. 1.1 gigahertz, 11.6-inch HD screen, 16.9 IPS, Intel HD graphics 500 with shared memory, 4 gigabytes of something, it doesn't even say RAM, and 32 gigabytes flash memory. So my advice when you're looking for these things, and you'll see this when you go to Costco, is that you want to make sure that these numbers are bigger than smaller. So like a dual core processor is not going to be as fast as the quad core processor, right? So yes. If you're looking at that, you can get a quad core for about $10 more. Then you want to look at this, the HD screen. So there's a difference in the little numbers. So if it says HD, that's fine, but it's not going to be as good as full HD, which is going to look better on your eyes. So if you're using this every day, you probably want to go with full HD. Yeah. And when it comes to memory inside these devices, they don't generally come with very much because you're not storing files on the Chromebook as much as you would, say, a regular laptop. So most of these computers that I'm looking at have just 32 gigs of flash memory, which is not, it doesn't sound like very much for a computer, but again, you're doing most processing and most storage in the cloud with these things. And again, when it comes to memory, you're going to see a number like 2 or 4. You want to go with the higher number because the more memory you have, the faster your computer is going to run, especially when you're switching through apps. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does make sense.
So again, the things you want to pay attention to are the processor, the screen, the memory, and the hard drive, or these are all flash memory. Hard drive, not as important on the Chromebook. But okay. And you want a touch screen, you said. So again, that's going to be, a lot of them are touch screen, but that's going to add some to the price. The other thing that they do is they have a lot of these that flip over kind of backwards. Do you need that feature?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Because that means that you can kind of use it as a tablet. The only thing is, you said you're a teacher. The benefit of that is that you can put your computer on your desk, flip the screen back, and kind of use it as almost like a presentation for the kids.
Yeah, a teaching tool.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like if you're trying to teach them something. So,
right.
And the Asus or the Acer one is the R13 that's popular for that. And it's $400. So
Right. And I don't mind $400 because I've been finding them good deals on them.
Yeah.
But I don't want a real inexpensive one. I want something that's going to carry me through.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you get one of these that's going to be $189, it's just not going to last. And you're going to be frustrated too. It's going to be way too slow.
Can I connect a Chromebook to my hotspot on my iPhone?
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
So you turn on the hotspot and then you just go into your Chromebook in the Wi-Fi and just connect it the same way you would a regular computer.
And then can a Chromebook connect directly into a printer?
Not necessarily. It may actually. It depends on the model if you can do that.
Okay.
You can get it to print. There are ways.
All right.
It depends. But most of the time, you're probably going to want to use a Wi-Fi enabled printer to do that. But
okay.
Yeah.
And then do you have time for one more question about printers?
I can. Off the air. Hang on 1 second, okay?
Okay,
Sherry,
thank you.
Hold on there. You're listening to The Tech Guy, Rich DeMuro, in for Leo Laporte today. We'll take your calls at 888-ASK-LEO after this. 888-827-5536. We'll be right back talking more technology. All right, Sherry, what's going on? What's the other question?
All right. So the other thing is, I want to have a all-in-one printer I can have at work. But I don't want anything real expensive if it gets stolen or broken with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at the HP Envys that are $99, like the 50, 55. It's like $99, but I can get it on sale. Is something like that something you would recommend, or can you recommend a lower price color printer?
Okay, I'm going to go to the same website that I went to before, which is Wirecutter. And let's see. So the thing about the cheap printers, like the HP one, is it's going to be cheap at the beginning, and then of course you're going to pay for the ink, you know?
Right.
So, but if your school is going to pay for that, I don't know. I mean, I've heard that teachers always are buying their own equipment, right?
I'm buying my own, but I make a decent salary at this point.
Okay, so that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends how much you're printing from it. I mean, I'm looking at this one. So they recommend this OfficeJet. This is $180. That's way too expensive. This is $120. Yeah. That's not that bad.
No, that's not bad.
That's not bad. I think you go with this one for $120. This is the HP OfficeJet Pro 8710. And I mean, that's $109. Now let's see. How much is the ink for this thing? Let's see. Ink cartridge is going to be $63. I mean, isn't that crazy? That's for the color.
The
black is going to be $44. So, I mean, the black, I don't know how much color versus black you're doing. You said you're out of school, so you probably will be doing a fair amount of color.
I do a fair amount of color.
But that's not too bad. I mean, it's a little expensive, but...
Yeah, but when I looked at the 5055, the XL ink was like more like, I think... $40, $50, a little bit cheaper than what you just quoted.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not that big of a difference. And this printer is coming highly rated, so...
I'll definitely go look at that.
And by the way, this printer has wireless, which is cool, because you'll be able to print from your computer there, too.
And then, can I ask you, do you recommend the Acer? I know I will definitely go to Costco, but do you recommend the Acer? Is there brand of...
Yeah, Acer, I personally like the Acers the best when it comes to the Chromebooks.
Okay.
I think that they do the most volume with Chromebooks.
Okay. All right.
I think that, and I've tested personally, I think it was the R11, which was last year's model, and it was great.
Okay,
now I think it's the R13, which is the update. And that one, that one for $400 has great specs. You get full HD, 13-inch screen, quad-core processor, 4 gigs of memory or RAM, and then 64 gigs of flash hard drive.
Oh, 64 would be good.
So 64 gives you a little extra room to,
Yeah, it does. It does. Okay, I'll definitely look into it, but thank you so much. You've been so helpful.
All right, Sherry. Thank you.
Okay.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right.
Welcome back to The Tech Guy. Rich DeMuro here, filling in for a vacationing Leo Laporte. On the show now with me is Dick DiBartolo. You know him as the GizWiz. What's up?
Hey, how you doing, Rich? Yeah, I was out in Reno at Interbike.
Interbike. So
Interbike is a monstrous show about bikes. But the great thing, it's every kind of bike and a lot of other stuff. Like, are you a daredevil person?
You will not find me jumping out of any planes anytime soon.
Oh, okay. Have you ever played with a hoverboard?
You know, like in Back to the Future? I still can't find those. Where are they?
No, the little one.
Yes. I actually had one. You mean the ones that exploded?
Yes.
Yes. I actually had one. And it was I mustered up the courage to, play on this thing. My kids thought it was so cool. And, of course, I had all the headgear on and stuff just because I wanted to protect myself.
Yes, no, I know. So now picture this. You take the hoverboard and you cut it in pieces and you cut it. So now you have a platform hoverboard for each foot. Oh. And now you own hover shoes.
Oh, my. So they took it and they cut it in half.
Yes. Okay. Actually, it's less than half. And I could not get the hang of it. I asked the CEO of the company was there, and I said, you know what? How many men are in the booth? She said, 5. I said, bring them all out here to hold me up. So these are very tricky. So when you just put them down on the ground, they take a minute, and they level themselves out. Now, you have to step on it.
Okay.
But
that's the scariest part.
Yes. You have to step on it dead center with your weight exactly even, because when I stepped on it, I was leaning a touch forward and I started going forward. You have to be totally balanced on the first one, and then you stand on the second one. And then when you're totally balanced, standing still, that's when you start leaning forward or leaning backward. And I mean, the guys who work at the company, they were zooming in and out of booths and outdoors.
Well, of course they are. They work at the company.
Yes,
I mean,
exactly.
If they were falling over, I mean, I'd be worried.
Yeah, they do that 8 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I think there's a large learning curve with these, and they are not inexpensive.
Did you see anyone else get on them?
No, I did not.
You didn't? Okay. So
I did not.
This is the thing. And you bring up an interesting point, because you said that these guys were on these things, they're zipping around. But, I mean, these look pretty dangerous. And I get it that the hoverboards were similar. You either could do it or you couldn't. And it does take a little bit to kind of figure it out. But, I mean, would you say these are more dangerous than those scooters around, or are they?
You know what? They say that they're less dangerous, but this way it seems like your whole body would go into a wall with a hoverboard. This way it seems like you could split your body in two as your legs go in two different directions.
Well, also, can't these things get underneath you and kind of go out forward while you flip backwards?
I didn't have that happen, because what happened with me, it slipped out under me. But I think you're closer to the ground than the hoverboard, because I just stepped back and was on solid ground. I would certainly want people standing around me, and I would watch several videos. The company has like a learning video, because they can go seven. They're 7 miles an hour. Okay.
Oh wow.
That's pretty. Yeah.
What's
pretty
walking?
Fast.
Walking is what, like 3 miles an hour?
Walking fast, I think, is 3 miles
okay.
an hour. I'm a 3 mile an hour.
Me too. I'm a faster walker. So I
yes, exactly. People are always going, where are you going? Where are you going? To fire?
Well, you're in New York City, so I mean, that people walk fast there.
They do. They do. Now, these guys are $499.
Wow.
They already sold the first production run. If you go to gizwiz.biz and click on the tech guy, there's a link there. And then you can go to their website where guys do amazing things with them. They're not for me. It sounds like they're not going to be for you. But for people who want the latest in technology, I mean, a lot of technology in this thing with balancing, the lights on the thing actually are telling you the battery life as you're riding. They can hold up to top load. I asked about that. $176 is the top payload that the shoes can carry.
Wait, 176 pounds.
Pounds. Okay. And you should be a minimum of 22 pounds.
Oh, wow. If you're – okay. 22 pounds. I am not putting any child of mine that is 22 pounds on these skates, okay?
Well, wait a minute. How about sitting on one of them?
Oh, okay.
Okay.
If my kid was being really bad, maybe I'll send him off. Just push him, like a slight little push. Like, go!
Oh.
But 22 pounds is like a, you know, that's like a, I think that's smaller than my 4-year-old right now. But
right.
Have you heard of these Segway skates, the Drift W1?
No, you know, it's very funny because I was looking around at the hobby shoes today and I stumbled across that from, what company's making that again?
The Segways.
Oh, the Segway people.
Right.
Yes.
And so these are this kind of looks very similar to what you're talking about. Segway did an experience in LA. I wasn't able to go, but they put a bunch of people on these things, right? And they look very similar. But the reality is all of these things, I get it. There's always these people that hop on them and they just go. You know what I mean? Like there's always a person that doesn't have any fear and they just jump on them and boom, they're going. I'm not that person, right?
No, neither am I. As a matter of fact, when Segway came out with the Segway with the bar and the seat, I felt a little more comfortable.
Oh, absolutely. Like I'll hop on a Segway regular, you know, and
even
the low bar, anything that's like I can actually kind of control it. But when you're talking, you're balancing, you know, and these things are balancing themselves in a certain way, just like the ones you're talking about. But they still take a level of both confidence that you know you're going to be able to do this, and stepping on them is really the toughest part. Like when I had that hoverboard, did you ever master that?
I did. I have not. I have not. No, like you, I like something where there's a handle for my hands. And that was very tricky. The hoverboard and the hover skates. I thought the hover skate might be easy because you only did one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
But once I got on one, I thought, you know what? I'm not feeling great on this one. Now I'm going to put on another one.
So do you see this as a big market? Because now that we've got this company that's making these, and then you've got, you know, the Segway that's trying to make theirs, do you think that we'll see these as big as the hoverboards were?
You know, I don't think we're going to see them as big as the hoverboards, only because people are going to think back and think, you know, 2 months down the line, are we going to start saying, oh, my hover skate, oh, my hover shoes burst into flames?
Oh, no.
So I don't know. I think people are going to wait to see them in the marketplace for several months before they jump in. But I think kids are going to love them.
It kind of reminds me of those little shoes. Have you seen the kids that have it's just a regular sneaker, but it has a little roller skate kind of ball on the end at the heel?
Yes, and that's the one where you can run along and then lean back and the ball touches, and yes.
I mean,
they're
that's
like shoe skates.
Yeah, they're just like shoe skates. I mean, so I think if kids are doing that, and I've seen kids kind of like quickly do that, and clearly they master that pretty fast. So maybe this is just something that the next generation will take for granted, is that they're going to have hover skates.
It could be. It'd be a great way to go to work if you live, if you work less than 7 miles from where you live.
So that's the charge, is 7 miles.
The charge is an hour and a half. So you get to the office, you can charge them up and go out on lunch and come back and charge them up and go home for dinner.
And I think people are looking for these solutions that are kind of these last mile solutions, right?
Yes. And the other thing was like Uber bikes, these cargo bikes. I saw a cargo bike there that carried three kids, a kid behind you in a seat, And then, like, it's like a wheelbarrow thing built into the front with a bench.
Oh,
my gosh.
So
two young kids can sit in there. And then you, the father, are actually piloting from the regular bike seat, or as they call it out there, the bike saddle. It's not a seat.
All right, Dick, give me the website that people can go to.
Gizwiz.biz. Click on Dick Visits the Tech Guy.
All right. Thanks so much for joining the show today.
Buddy.
Appreciate it, Dick. I'm Rich DeMuro. Thanks for letting me sit in today. We will have more of The Tech Guy soon. Thank you for joining me today. Appreciate it.
Well, that's it for The Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.